The EU's chief negotiator, Michel Barnier, is a man of great patience. And for the past 3 years, as he steered the EU talks on the Brexit divorce with the UK, that process has tested Monsieur Barnier's patience to the limits. Finally, this morning, ahead of the critical council meeting of EU leaders this afternoon, Monsieur Barnier was able to tell the waiting media the deal was done.
The UK government has wanted to open one point in the withdrawal agreement, a key point, the question of the protocol on Ireland and Northern Ireland. Throughout these negotiations, the EU and the UK were fully committed to protect peace, to protect stability on the island of Ireland. We had to reconcile two objectives. First, include a legally operative solution in the withdrawal agreement that would avoid a hard border between Ireland and Northern Ireland, preserve the whole island economy and protect the integrity of the single market. Secondly, a point extremely important to Prime Minister Johnson and the UK was that Northern Ireland remains in the UK's customs territory. Discussions over the past days have at times been difficult, but we have delivered, and we have delivered together.
We have delivered together, said Monsieur Barnier, and he added that the most important issue for him in the 3 years of negotiations was peace.
Ladies and gentlemen, obviously, when discussing Northern Ireland, we talk about the economy, about technical matters, about goods. But let me say very frankly that for me, since day one, since 3 years, what really matters are the people of Northern Ireland and Ireland. What really matters is peace.
Well, first reaction to that news from Brussels came in Leinster House at Leaders' Question this lunchtime. Here's Fianna Fáil Deputy Leader Dara Cailleary.
Prime Minister Johnson spoke of not being quite at the summit, but being at the Hillary step. The summit is not far away, but at the moment there is a cloud at the top. That cloud remains. That cloud is the DUP. And by getting to the point we have, relationships on the island, political relationships, have been damaged in recent times. They're not what they could be or should be. And I think it's important that we engage the DUP, as well as London engage the DUP, around their concerns. And I again ask, have you any plans to do that, either at political or official level, between now and Saturday, to try and bridge the gap that is there?
And Taoiseach Simon Coveney gave a cautious and diplomatic welcome to the news of the deal.
Our approach on this has always been to listen to all political parties, including both unionist parties. Of course, we don't always agree. But I mean, I think it is important to say that while of course we want to reach out and we want to ensure that a deal is something that all parties in Northern Ireland can live with, that doesn't mean we can change the deal between now and when it's potentially voted on in Westminster. And we shouldn't pretend that we can.
So
the deal is now what it is. I expect that it will be put to a vote in the Westminster Parliament on Saturday. And really, the management of that vote, from the government's perspective, is a matter for the Prime Minister and his team.
And after those statements in the Dáil this lunchtime, a statement from the DUP has been issued just as we came on air, saying that the Democratic Unionist Party will be unable to support these proposals in Parliament, and saying that these arrangements drive a coach and horses through the professed sanctity of the Belfast Agreement. Tony Connolly in Brussels, good afternoon.
Hello.
Your assessment of where we're at this lunchtime? Tony, can you hear me?
Anya, can you hear me?
Yes,
yeah,
I can.
Yes, I can, Anya, yeah. This is obviously the fruit of 3 years of excruciating negotiations to try and square the circle. And there's, I think, a bit of pain for everyone here, but also It's hard to see how much further both sides could have gone in pushing the limits of the red lines on both sides. I suppose a first point would be to say that the original backstop was really a safety net. It would be the third solution if other solutions didn't work. So the first solution would be a free trade agreement. A second solution would be alternative arrangements like technology. Mm-hmm. And if those didn't work, then we would have this backstop concept. What this does is it disregards the first two solutions and says, at the end of the transition period, which is either the end of 2020 or perhaps the end of 2022, we go straight to this new arrangement. It guarantees no hard border because there's no customs or regulatory checks on the island of Ireland. It essentially guarantees a customs and regulatory border on the Irish Sea, but they would be mitigated by lots of exemptions and other facilitations. Mm-hmm. And it brings in the whole question of consent. And there you have a fairly elaborate set of arrangements whereby the Stormont Assembly would give its consent either every 4 years or depending on the kind of vote they use, it could be every 8 years. There's a lot of questions over how this will actually work mm-hmm. in principle, but all sides are saying that none of this will mean a veto for either side, that this democracy cornerstone, as Michel Barnier calls it, takes away the need for an insurance policy because we simply go straight to this arrangement at the end of the transition.
Has the legal text been published yet for the leaders to see before the council meeting? Because that was the big issue before the meeting this afternoon, wasn't it?
Yes, I mean, the legal text was published perhaps about 30 minutes after the announcement came that the deal had been done. So there's been furious briefing going on. EU 27 mm-hmm. ambassadors are being briefed by Michel Barnier at the moment. He's already briefed the Brexit coordinators from the member states. So there's a lot of explanation going on. But I suppose it's important also to say that they've only taken out the Irish protocol from the withdrawal agreement. Everything else stays as it was. They've taken out the Irish protocol and they've changed it and they've put it back in. So that's all they have to assess. But still, there are and have been grave mm-hmm. concerns about how this would impact the single market. And there will be people wanting to know, well, what are these exemptions that are going to apply to goods coming from a third country, which is Great Britain, to the single market, which will be, to all intents and purposes, the island of Ireland. And those questions will have to be answered.
Let's separate the two key issues for the moment, customs and consent. Let's deal with the customs arrangement first, which in some ways, even though it's fiendishly difficult, may be simpler to sort out. It's a bit like Schrödinger's cat, isn't it? That Northern Ireland will be there and not there. It will be in the UK's customs territory, but working on the EU's customs rules. That's essentially the nub of the deal there.
Yeah, that's essentially it. So it's technically in the UK's customs territory, but it'll be operating the EU's tariffs and procedures and rules of origin and so on. Now, that means you have to have customs checks on goods going from Great Britain into Northern Ireland. So there you have your customs border on the Irish Sea. But what they've done is they've said, OK, we're going to have some automatic exemptions there. That would be for people just travelling back and forward, their personal effects, whatever's in their suitcase, essentially, none of that would be liable for customs checks. If you're moving house, for example, none of that would face any customs checks mm-hmm. or tariffs. Then there's going to be a whole schedule of other goods and tradable products that might go back and forward. Do they all face tariffs? Well, that's going to be worked out by the Joint Committee, which is the body set up under the withdrawal agreement to manage the future relationship. And that's going to be a fairly mucky process because this Joint Committee is going to have to decide which of these goods going over to Northern Ireland don't pose a risk to the single market. They're going to have fairly strong guarantees that the goods are going to end up where they're supposed to end up and that they won't cross the land border into the south and by extension into the single market. So they're going to have to work out through risk analysis, which of these goods are pretty safe and can be waved through and which don't look pretty safe and which will require further checks and controls. Now, that was that was actually already there in the original withdrawal agreement in terms of how you would manage a customs border in the Irish Sea. But this is not going to be nailed down in this withdrawal treaty. It's going to be worked out by a joint committee. And in that joint committee, the EU has a veto. So the EU has a fairly firm hand on the tiller in terms of how those exemptions will work.
All right. Tommy Gorman, stay with us, Tony. Tommy Gorman is also with us from Belfast. And Tommy, on the issue of consent, again, I'm going back to the DUP statement, which I've just seen as we came on air. They're saying, first of all, their objection is that the elected representatives of Northern Ireland will have no say on whether Northern Ireland enters those arrangements. So they want a vote before it ever starts. And then the second objection is, in terms of this rolling review every 4 years, these arrangements, again, the principles of the Belfast Agreement on consent have been abandoned in favour of majority rule on this single issue alone. How do you read this DUP statement, Tommy, and the situation they've ended up in on consent?
I read what happened, Áine, as the DUP were Boris Johnson's very best friend. He went to their event on the fringes of the Conservative Party conference. He came to their party conference. Boris Johnson and his associates looked at the realpolitik here. He knew what he needed to do to get a deal. Leo Varadkar replaced the DUP as Boris Johnson's very best friend. They developed a relationship. He was attempting to accommodate the requirements of the DUP, but in the end, it wasn't a case of him throwing the DUP under the bus. The DUP weren't ready to travel, and the Boris bus took off and landed in Brussels. The question of consent is probably one of the examples which illustrates exactly what has happened. The DUP were hoping, and in some ways it was kind of contradictory and convoluted, they were hoping to use a mechanism of the Good Friday Agreement where you need a majority of unionists and a majority of nationalists for something to happen. And that effectively gives either the unionists or the nationalists a veto. Arlene Foster talked about collegiality going to be involved. And I think she was looking to get to that place. But Nigel Dodds, under pressure, said, no, we will have a veto. And the person who confronted them was the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, Julian Smith. He said, no one group will have consent. And that, I suppose, was the game changer. And if you look at the text and have studied it, it states that this matter will be decided by a simple majority. And in many respects, it's so, so logical, because the Europeans were struggling to accommodate why, I suppose, such a count had to be given and why the DUP had to be given such space in this, given that Northern Ireland was going to be leaving the European Union. And they were not going to surrender, I suppose, some control over future EU policies to this convoluted mechanism where a minority could have a veto. So they went on the simple majority basis. And I think that's the hardest thing to swallow. Looking at the statement, you'd wonder, OK, in the circumstances, things have changed. The DUP have benefited a lot. They were actually involved in the negotiations at the beginning. They had lots of behind-the-scenes discussions with the Irish government. And you think, would the pragmatic side of them kick in and say, look, we need to grab what we can from this here, find a rabbit, dress it up and say, we're all on board. But the actual statement they've just issued says the vote in Westminster will be part of a long process of the British government trying to get its withdrawal bill through the House of Commons.
Yes, and I want to go to Gary Gibbon in London, who from Channel 4 News, Tommy, but one question to you before I go to him. From the DUP's point of view, arguably, looking at what's on the table today, compared with what was on the table from Theresa May, they helped shaft Theresa May over the backstop. Now they're getting shafted by Boris Johnson over what looks like a worse deal.
Well, there is the border down the Irish Sea, a virtual border or whatever kind of border. There is no border on the island of Ireland. It's a good news story for, say, for south of the border, for the majority of people who voted to remain in the European Union. It's difficult for the DUP. But I really think, in fairness to them, Áine, before we go, it's important to say Boris Johnson would probably not have come to Dublin without DUP encouragement. The DUP did move on regulatory alignment. That was the start of their concessions. But they just misread the mood. And it's one thing to actually pull the plug or pull the carpet from under Theresa May. But Dominic Cummings and Boris Johnson are different people, and they've just found that out.